gotta have faith. Ooh, I gotta have faith. Because I gotta have faith, faith, faith. I gotta have faith, faith, faith.
Bit of Chili Peppers. You know, I think I could be a DJ. DJ should be in my future. Definitely. Right after something sports. Because, you know, that's why we're here. We're here for Sports City with Jay Smith. I am Jay Smith, your host, here at every Tuesday at 5 to 6 on radio.dominican.edu. Of course, we got a little housekeeping, as Brian Sanchez of the Sports Report likes to say. There's a Facebook page. Go on Facebook. Pages Sports City with Jay Smith. Yeah, you're going to want to look at that. It gives you links. It gives you information. Go like that on Facebook. There's a blog, sportscityu.blogspot.com. Go there. It's like a more detailed Sports City. You know, I only have an hour. I can't fit everything in that I want to say. Go to sportscityu.blogspot.com. Detailed analysis. Numbers. I love my numbers. It's a good blog. A lot of stuff that's going on in this past week of sports, actually. A lot of stuff. There's NBA closing up, and I believe I said last week or the week before that right now is the best time in sports. Especially March Madness just happened. Right now is the best time in sports. You have NBA closing out the season, getting into playoff position. Playoffs are about to start. NHL is the same way. They have about the same schedule as basketball. Baseball is starting, which is always a good thing. NFL draft is coming up. It's a lot of big things happening right now. April is one of the best sports months. April and October, basically, are the sports months. And right now we're in the middle of April, and it feels good. So after the break, a lot of NBA stuff. As always, we have King's Corner. A lot of different variety on King's Corner. A lot of different stuff to talk about. And that'll all be next on Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. Back on Sports City here with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. Again, you can call in. I welcome calls, love calls from friends, from anybody that's listening to the show, really. I cherish calls, so please call in. And that number is 415-482-3587. Again, 415-482-3587. 8-7. On to the sports. Now, first, we got a little NBA talk. And I'm going to start with the big one. I'm going to start with the big NBA talk, the most important thing, and that is the championship. Who's going to win the championship? Everybody likes predictions. Everybody likes to say, oh, you know, I called that. Well, you know what? I'm going to go with what looks like right now one of the favorites to win everything. And I will say, preseason, I took the Heat. I said, there's no way that anybody can beat them. Another year with their big three together, another year for Eric Spoelstra to work on that defense and work on that offense. And Eric Spoelstra, that's quite a story, but that's for another show. and another year for them to compete. They were a game four collapse and just a few points away from winning the championship. Everybody said their season was a colossal failure. They lost in game six of the finals. The Heat season was not a colossal failure. Maybe for the expectations that everybody had, but going to the finals of the NBA is pretty dang good. All of that said, and I stuck with the Heat for about the first half of the year. I still said their defense is relentless. LeBron is playing out of his mind. Wade is having an incredibly efficient year. Everything was working out, but then the Oklahoma City Thunder started to say, don't forget about us. And they kept winning and kept winning and kept winning and kept beating good teams. They didn't beat the Kings, but they beat good teams. And looking up and down that Thunder lineup, I don't see a way that they lose a championship. I can't honestly picture them losing the championship. They have to win with this type of lineup. So you have Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. Those are your big three. And then Westbrook and Durant, your big two. And that is quite a big two to have. Those are two of the 10 best players in the entire NBA. That's a pretty good big two to have already. James Harden is their not-so-secret weapon. He's going to win NBA Sixth Man of the Year. He's a sixth man. He's the first one off the bench, but he does play the third most minutes on the team. And the thing that strikes out at me is that those are the only three people on all of the Thunder that play more than 30 minutes, which means their depth is absolutely incredible. So you have that first three, the Harden, Westbrook, Durant. That's your point guard, shooting guard, and or really, you could just say those are your two guards and then your small forward right there. And those, they all can score basically at will. All three of them can score anytime they want. So you have to have defense, right? You don't really need scoring. You have enough scoring. You need defense at the front court. You need to stop those big teams that can try to overpower you. Well, they went out and did that. They went out and drafted Serge Ibaka and then got Kendrick Perkins last year in that trade from the Celtics. And those two make two of the best defensive... Those are the two of the best defensive front court mates in the league right now. And then you go on and add Nick Collison, who is so, so, so underappreciated. I love people that take charges. DeMarcus Cousins, I love him for taking charges. Leads the league this year. Nick Collison led the league last year. Taking charges gets you a turnover and a foul on the other team, and it's a huge momentum shifter. Nick Collison is one of the best in the league at that. And, you know, everybody likes to say, oh, he does the little things the right way. Every talking head, every sports analyst has said that. And Nick Collison does it. You know, he is the embodiment of that does the little things the right way. He sets perfect screens. He makes sure that he doesn't move, and he gets his body so wide that it's almost impossible for a guard to get around him. And he sets the screens. He gets offensive rebounds. He does everything that he's asked. And that brings me to Scott Brooks, their coach, because it's so hard for a coach to tell your players, you have a specific role. I need you to not go outside of that role much. I need you to stay in that role and not do anything more, not do anything less. Well, Nick Collison doesn't want the fame. He'll just go out and do what his job is. Thabo Sefolosha, a starter, is only getting 20 minutes a game, but he doesn't care. He's out there to stop the opposing team's best perimeter guard or best perimeter wing, really. You know, the LeBron James, Kobe Bryant of the league. And he does a good job at that. He's very efficient. If you look at his advanced numbers, it's something like his defensive rating is 103, which means, how do I put this? Every 100 possessions, the other team scores 103 points against him when he's on the court. And then you add Serge Ibaka to that, and those are just... both of those are starters. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, They're so long and they're so athletic. And this is actually the reason I thought the Heat would win. But the Thunder just take it to another level. Their length is incredible. Ibaka is leading the league in blocks by a wide margin, too. He's not the best one-on-one defender, but every good team needs a shot blocker. You need to be afraid to go in the lane. Same thing with Kendrick Perkins. Great defensive numbers. Those two on the floor together are absolutely incredible. They even have Nazi Muhammad. Haven't heard that name in a while, but Nazi Muhammad is their fifth big man, which is amazing. Nazi Muhammad was a starter for a championship Spurs team in 2005. And he's not past his... I mean, he's only 33, 34, and he's still just the fifth big man fifth big man on their rotation. It's incredible that all of the depth that the Thunder have. And that's the reason I just can't see them losing a championship. I'm calling it right now. Thunder winning the championship. And especially after last year, they had that grueling, amazing series against the Grizzlies in the second round. They went the distance against the Thunder. They went the distance against the Mavs. They have that playoff experience now. They can't just say, you know, they're still young, they're still a year away. Their year away is now. As Cubs fans like to say, there's always next year. Well, this is next year for the Thunder, and it does hurt me. It does hurt to see Seattle go through this and see Seattle look at the absolute amazing success that the Thunder are having. But Oklahoma City has a team now. It's their team, and it's a shame, but it's happening, and I'm saying championship. Other news around the NBA. Since we're going with predictions, I have another prediction, and this really isn't a prediction. It's what I think should happen, and I'm saying Greg Popovich has to absolutely win the Coach of the Year award. A lot of people are saying Tom Thibodeau should win. Last year, he brought the defense from 11th to 1st. This year, he brought the offense from 11th to 4th. This is one of the most efficient teams ever. They've had so many injuries. Rose has been down for something like 15 games. You know, the reigning MVP goes down, and they still have the best record in the entire league. That's a pretty amazing coaching job. But Greg Popovich has Tim Duncan, who is just straight old by now. It's amazing that he's still playing at a high level. Manu Ginobili has been gone about half the year. Tony Parker has come out of nowhere to be one of the top 10 players in the league. Not even top 10 point guards. He really is one of the top 10 players in the entire league right now. And it kind of is weird to think about, but Tony Parker is turning into one of the best point guards ever. You think of the point guards that can lead a team to a number one seed being the best player on that team. And you can't say Ginobili or Duncan or anybody else, because Ginobili's been out half the year and Duncan is not at the level that Parker is. I can think of Steve Nash, Isaiah Thomas, Chris Paul. Even Chris Paul couldn't bring his team a number one seed. He's never had a number one, number two, or even number three seed. His Hornets teams were always around 4 or 5. This year's Clippers are hovering around 3 or 4. Chris Paul hasn't done it, but Tony Parker is going out and having an absolute career year, and he's probably right now one of the top 100, top 75 players of all time. And that's pretty incredible for a guy that's mostly known for cheating on Eva Longoria. I don't know. It's amazing what Tony Parker's turning into. Sticking with the Western Conference, the Memphis Grizzlies have been getting a lot of airtime, national airtime, recently. Last year, they upset the Spurs in the first round. Zach Randolph just went absolutely ballistic on the entire Spurs defense, including Tim Duncan. Marc Gasol has turned into a top five center. The Grizzlies have a lot of pieces. Rudy Gay, Mike Conley, Tony Allen, Maurice Spites. A lot of really, really good pieces. And they are competing for the third seed right now. They could really be anywhere between 3 and 6 right now in the Western Conference. It's a very, very tight race. I think it's all worth it. I think the Grizzlies are absolutely worth the hype. And there's a big reason for that, and that's Tony Allen. Tony Allen should be second in Defensive Player of the Year. I talked last week about how I think LeBron James should be the Defensive Player of the Year. This week I'll talk about how Tony Allen should be the second best defensive player, the second best defensive player of the year. He completely stops everyone. Everyone. They've put him on Kobe. They've put him on Westbrook. They've put him on Wade. They can put him on any guard in the entire league, and that guard will be stopped. Absolutely stopped. His hands and his quickness are like watching Bruce Bowen, and he's got that little edge, too, that Bruce Bowen had. You knew Bruce Bowen was like, you're not going to win this matchup. And you have that edge that Tony Allen has. Plus, but he's much more athletic than Bruce Bowen ever was. Tony Allen is not just known as a defender and that's it. He's also known as a dunker. He's an athlete. And he's got too much muscle. He's a little too big to be that much of an athlete and a dunker. But it doesn't matter. He's got such good coordination and such good athleticism that he can stay in front of anyone. And people like the Thunder, people like, you know, the Bulls, they rely on the penetration of their point guards. And if Tony Allen's guarding you, that's going to be very, very tough. And that's why I think the Grizzlies really do most likely form the biggest threat for the Thunder in the West. I think it might just be another Thunder-Grizzlies rematch, except this time in the Western Conference, just because they match up perfectly. You know, the Grizzlies have that defensive backcourt and the offensive frontcourt with Randolph and Gasol. And then the Thunder the exact opposite, like I talked about. I think that matchup, as we saw last year, is so, so great, and it could be even better this year in the playoffs. Another thing that happened this week was Carmelo Anthony just absolutely going off. 43 points in Madison Square Garden against the Bulls. He hits a three to go into overtime. He hits a three to win the game. He just went off. And I was reading a little bit about Carmelo Anthony, and I saw that I love talking about clutch statistics. If you want to look at clutch statistics on your own, go to 82games.com. They're the leader in clutch statistics. It's sortable. You can go by points per clutch times. You can go by field goal percentage. And when I look at it, I go by points, but then you also have to weed out everything. I see that Kobe Bryant has about the eighth most points during clutch time, except he also has a 35% field goal percentage during that time. When you look at Carmelo Anthony, more points and 54% field goal percentage, including about 37% from three. He really is clutch. And Kobe loves to play hero ball, as it's called. Take it isolation. I'm going to take a difficult shot, but just watch me make it. And then a lot of times he doesn't make it. The thing about Carmelo is he does the exact same thing, except he just straight up makes it more. Carmelo is just more clutch than almost anybody else in the league. I'd put Durant up there and maybe even Chris Paul, but Carmelo Anthony, like we saw, he loves that big stage in Madison Square Garden against the top team. He came through. He really did come through. And on the last note, back to the Western Conference, Lamar Odom just recently got released. Not really got released, but it was on mutual terms that Lamar Odom and the Mavs part ways. And Lamar Odom will be inactive for the rest of the year. No one will be able to pick him up. And that's Lamar Odom, the third best player on a championship team. And third, fourth best player, yeah, on a championship team, and he goes to a team doesn't play well at all, and he is literally not going to be able to play for the entire playoffs. It's almost a travesty, and I completely blame Odom. I think that the Mavs were fine with this. They took a gamble. They gave him his shot. Odom is completely to blame. He left his heart in L.A. He got so Hollywood with the Kardashian stuff, which, by the way, if you've heard me talk about that couple, that is the ugliest couple I have ever seen in my entire life. Lamar Odom and Khloe Kardashian. Yeah, I think it's Khloe. Yeah, Khloe Kardashian is the ugliest couple I've ever seen in my entire life. Just straight awful. Ooh, bad. Don't want to see them at all. But he got too Hollywood about it. And he wanted to be in LA. Pau Gasol got traded with Odom in the trade that Odom got all upset about. But Odom was the only one to get too upset about it and request a trade. Gasol trudged on, and now the Lakers are the third seed in the West. They were supposed to age with this 66-game schedule, with the lockout-shortened schedule. No, they're still the third seed behind the Spurs and the Thunder, two absolute powerhouses. And the Lakers could be up in that powerhouse, too. I mean, they have Kobe, they have Gasol, they have Bynum. Anything can happen when you have a big three like that. Odom could have been that fourth. They could be the number two seed in the West right now. But Odom just couldn't deal with it. It's such a bad attitude. And I know all about bad attitudes in the NBA, watching DeMarcus Cousins for 2 years up close. But this is bad. You're just going to be inactive for the rest of the year. I don't know. It's a little shameful. I'd be a little bit ashamed if I was Lamar Odom. It's not good press for him. It's not good press for the Mavericks. And the Lakers might have gotten out best in this whole thing, but there's really no winner. You can't pick a winner out of this. It's sad. I love that the Lakers lost, obviously, but I kind of like the Mavs. And it's sad to see this. Anyways, that's about it for NBA talk. Up next, as always, got a little King's Corner session for you. Sticking to basketball. A lot of stuff on King's Corner, too. It's been busy week in Kings basketball. Got a game tonight. Busy week on and off the court in Kings basketball, too. So you're not going to want to miss this. This is Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. to Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. Now, it's time for King's Corner. And we'll start off the field this time, actually. As every Kings fan knows, and it's getting national attention, too. A lot of times, it's kind of rare to see the Kings in national attention, rare to see them on ESPN, rare to see David Stern talking about them. But it's happening right now, but it's not happening for the right reasons. And that's because, as a lot of people know, the Kings, a couple weeks ago, settled. For sure, it was a final deal that they had the payments in plan to build the new arena that would keep the Kings here for 30 years, starting in 2015. Which is very, very good news. Every single Kings fan was ecstatic about that. But recently, George Maloof, one of the Maloofs, you know how you have Gavin, Joe, and George. George doesn't really like to be in the spotlight a lot. He's kind of more business. Joe seems to be more reserved. And then Gavin is the eccentric one and kind of the rash one. He's always... No, I wouldn't say always, because when the Kings were bad, you rarely saw him at courtside. But he used to be always in his courtside seats, always being the loudest one in the arena, just going nuts, like I think an owner should. I think an owner should have that type of commitment, should have that type of passion. But you see it, and now that after everything that the Kings fans have been through, you wonder if it's all fake. Because this is what George Maloof said about a week ago. I think it's a fair deal. We gave a lot. Everybody had to give. Sometimes you have to take chances, and we think this is worth taking. He says, clearly, in writing, I think it is a fair deal. Talking about them having to pay this advance on the arena, about $3 million. That wasn't a week ago. That was about a month ago. My bad. To now, just recently, like as in yesterday, in New York, George Maloof says his goal in New York is to put the project, in quotes, right back on track and start negotiating this thing again. So now they want to start negotiating again? But you said it was a fair deal. You said clearly this is a fair deal. We're under. Like, we have to pay, you guys are going to pay, we're going to get this thing done. It's your turn to pay, and you're not paying. You're not holding your... It doesn't make sense. I don't get how they can be so obtuse about it, to use a Shawshank reference. They're being very stubborn, but it's annoying to the millions and millions of Sacramento Kings fans. And they are still out there. And we do care about the team. And it seems like the Maloofs just don't care. They just don't care about the team. They can't pay this much to get the team. We already have basically the lowest payroll in the league. We're bargain hunters in that respect. And you can't pay this much right now to... You can't pay this much right now to get this arena deal done and keep the Kings here. It doesn't make sense what they're doing. It's sad to see the Kings being jerked around by an absolutely inconsiderate family that needs to really just get out. Just sell the team. We have buyers. Ron Burkle, who last year was about to buy the team to save it from going to Anaheim and save it and keep it here, he still wants to buy the team, and he's the guy that saved the Pittsburgh Penguins from leaving. He wants to buy the team to specifically save them, and he has the money. He will spend, but the Maloof said no. They're just being stubborn, and they are. It's affecting people, and I don't think David Stern will have any of this. I think that he's going to clamp down, and probably for the first time in his entire life, he's going to do something good for the Kings, which would be just a shocker to me, an absolute shocker. Now on to now we've got the off-field issue settled. Going on to the on-court issues, which, as of now, revolves basically around a few players. But one of them I like to talk about is Terrence Williams. Now, Terrence Williams was in the 2009 draft. He got drafted by the Nets, and it just wasn't working out. I mean, he only really played 20 minutes a game, but his off-field issues were kicking in. And by the next year, they traded him. Just right away. Traded him to the Rockets, and it wasn't look like he was going to do much. And it wasn't as if you're trading this high-caliber prospect to the Rockets. You were basically saying, okay, we have a bust. You deal with him now. You see if you can deal with the troubled player. Even though he was the 11th pick in the draft, no. They just didn't have patience. They had no patience. They go to the Rockets. I hate to bag on Daryl Morey because he's one of the smartest general managers in the league. But first, Jeremy Lin gets cut. And now Terrence Williams was not able to make it in Houston. And it's not like they traded him. They absolutely waived him. 5 days later, he gets picked up by the Kings. And this is really only 3 weeks ago that he was picked up by the Kings. And he's already making, to me, a huge impact on our team. While John Sammons is out, he's been taking up that role as the point forward and doing it marvelously. And the best thing that I love is him and Jim are playing together. Because when Jimmer's out there, it's usually with the bench. It's not with Isaiah Thomas, our best playmaker, because Isaiah Thomas and Jimmer Fredette in the backcourt would just be too small. It's just too small. That's all it is to it. It's a shame it can't work, but it's just not going to work. If you put Terrence Williams as a point forward in there with Jimmer as one of the guards, Jimmer is almost always open because Terrence Williams can penetrate very well, almost at will against other teams' benches, and then he finds Jimmer in the exact right spots, and they play off of each other so well. Terrence Williams is one of those forwards that's always thinking pass first, and I love that, especially for this Kings team, because you have Marcus Thornton, one of those volume scorers that's basically thinking shoot when he gets it, and I'm okay with that because I am a big Marcus Thornton fan. You have DeMarcus Cousins, who is a good passer, but will probably either shoot and miss and get his own offensive rebound, shoot and miss, get his own offensive rebound, shoot and miss again, get his own offensive rebound, and then shoot. And that's about it. That's DeMarcus's level of play. I'm okay with it because he's so good at it, but he's no Vlade Divac. He's not going to get 5 assists a game. Terrence Williams comes in, and everybody's all of a sudden open, and it's because of his penetration, and he doesn't need to score. We already have 4 players that are primary scorers, and they all think that they're primary scorers. Terrence Williams says, no, I'm okay with that. You guys can be the primary scorers. I will be this point forward, and he's being very, very successful with it. In the past, he's almost been a detriment to his team. In the past 2 years with the Nets and the Rockets, he really has affected them in a negative way. Like, he's actually worse than the below average player, which is saying something. That's very, very bad if you have a negative win share, which is basically how many wins you've created for the team. And it's negative over the past 2 years. He comes in already, and he's almost making up for it in his short time just right now for his entire career. It's pretty amazing to see Terrence Williams come out. And I will give Keith Smart basically all the credit. Keith Smart has proved to be amazing in dealing with troubled players. Terrence Williams had a terrible rep as a troubled player, as an off-field problem. I have seen nothing but good teamwork, but good attitude. He's always jumping off the bench, always picking his teammates up. I see nothing that has an attitude with him. And Keith Smart has done that with him, with Cousins. Even Tyreek had a little bit of an attitude problem. And you've seen him. He was willing to come off the bench. Keith Smart is very, very good at that. I do have problems with Smart's lineups and his substitutions, but in just his dealing with off-field or off-the-court players, I really think that Keith Smart is one of the best. I would say Phil Jackson is probably the best ever at that, but Keith Smart is very, very good at it. Now, recently I was talking with a friend, and we were debating two players, and those two players were DeMarcus Cousins and Andrew Bynum. And basically the debate was, who is the second best center in the league? Because I really do think that it's them, it's Dwight Howard, and then Bynum and Cousins in some order, and then you would put Gasol and maybe even Joakim Noah in there. You put others after those three, because it's Howard, Cousins, Bynum, or Bynum, Cousins. Now, for me, as much as I love DeMarcus Cousins, I take Bynum. 9 times out of 10, I take Bynum. DeMarcus, I'll give the advantages of DeMarcus. DeMarcus has quickness over Bynum. He's got those fast feet. He's got handles over Bynum. And he is definitely DeMarcus is about the best offensive rebounder in the league right now. And he's probably a better defensive rebounder than Andrew Bynum. Because Andrew Bynum is getting about something like 11 rebounds a game. DeMarcus is getting about 11 rebounds a game, except DeMarcus is doing it in 6 less minutes per game. And so I think DeMarcus has the edge in rebounding. But that's it. He has quickness and rebounding, and that's it. Bynum has that consistency. Bynum is a legit 7-footer. DeMarcus is 6'11". Bynum has the size advantage over Cousins, and Cousins is big and can outpower most people, but not a lot of people in the entire world can outpower Andrew Bynum. That guy is a monster in the paint. Yeah, Bynum has the size, he has the consistency, and he has the fundamentals, and especially the shot selection. Except for maybe that 1 3-pointer that he got all the beef about and that everybody got mad at Andrew Bynum about, I haven't seen a bad shot taken by Andrew Bynum when I've watched him. It's basically Shaq-esque. If you're within 10 feet, you're good. Outside, don't even bother. A lot of times DeMarcus will take those 18-foot fadeaways when he just says, I'm determined to score on this guy. But sometimes the defender plays you well, and you should just pass it off and repost. But he gets in this mindset that I have to score on him right now, and he takes a bad shot. He throws it up, expecting the foul to be called. It doesn't get called. It's a lot of bad shot selection from DeMarcus. And another thing with DeMarcus is that he's constantly in foul trouble, too. Just always in foul trouble. He's averaging over 4 fouls a game. He's 1 technical foul away from being suspended. He's not the league leader, but he is 2nd most in the league in technical fouls. I will say that they both have an attitude problem. Everybody in the world saw Andrew Bynum just absolutely deck J.J. Barea last year in those playoffs. So there's a clear attitude problem that Bynum has just from that. And there's been other issues too. And DeMarcus's attitude has been well chronicled by everyone in the media. But I think the foul trouble and the inconsistency that DeMarcus has. DeMarcus will have games that he has 8 points and 6 rebounds. I just don't see Andrew Bynum doing that. It's a lot of, you're either getting 25 or you're getting 10 from DeMarcus. I like the consistency that Bynum brings. And because of that foul trouble, because of the inability to stay on the court, I ultimately would take Bynum over Cousins. Give it a year, that might change. I still think, and I said this about a year ago, maybe even a year and a half ago, and I'm, you know, it's nice to be proud of your own predictions, especially when they come true. DeMarcus is blossoming so much, and I said that he will be the second best center in 2 years. And right now, he's on track to do just that. So I'm feeling a little proud of myself right now. That's it for King's Corner. Up next, we got, as always, Giants Talk. And it's exciting, Giants Talk, because, you know, the season actually started now, which is always a good thing. The season starting is always a good thing. Opening day has happened. Giants home opener hasn't happened, but we'll get there. We'll get there. It's a very exciting time in Giants season, and that'll be next on Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. And back on Sports City, Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. Remember, that's Tuesday, 5 to 6. And now it's time for a little Giants talk. And like I said, Giants actually started their season finally. They're four games in. Don't have a game today, but they've had four games. And unfortunately, they're 1-3. But I don't really want to talk about the three at the end so much as I want to talk about the one. And to do that with me, I have Brian Sanchez of Sports Report every 6 to 8 on radio.dominican.edu. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How you doing, Jordan?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Now, yesterday, a miracle happened. And that miracle is Barry Zito. Zito went 9 shutout innings. And this is all after the Giants' three best pitchers, and three of the best pitchers in the entire baseball league, give up, don't go past 6 innings, don't give up less than 4 runs each. And then Zito goes into Coors Field, known as being the best hitter's park in the league, and he throws 9 shutout innings. Brian, how do you make sense of that?
Well, I really can't. And another thing is that the first three, Lincecum, Kane, Bumgarner, all gave up two home runs apiece as well. I mean, they just got absolutely crushed in Arizona. And then Zito just comes out, nine innings, four hits, no walks. It was unbelievable. I was in class for the first couple innings, and I'm going to be real honest, I was in no hurry to get back because I was like, oh, it's a Zito start. I was following on my phone, so I knew we were up 2-0 because Pablo keeps doing his thing. But I was like, how long is it going to last? I mean, even Kane went four strong, and then at the end, he came out just like
gave up
Lincecum
a
and Bumgarner did too. So I was like, you know, eventually it's going to go, and then it's like fifth inning, sixth inning. Okay, pull him now. I know he might still have some left in him, but let's not take our chances. Seventh inning.
Exactly. It's Barry Zito.
And then after the eighth, I was like, oh, it's over. It's complete game shutout. They're down by, what was it, six or seven?
Yeah.
And
7-0.
They didn't care. And if I was a Rockies fan, I'd be pissed off.
And that was their opening night, too.
That's terrible.
To see that on their opening night, one of the worst contracts, one of the worst pitchers in the National League in baseball, go out and just destroy them with 83 mile per hour fastballs.
Yeah. Jamie Moyer liked it over from the Rockies.
Exactly. 49 year old Jamie Moyer liked it. And
he throws harder.
The Giants have actually told Zito, we want you to throw more like Jamie Moyer. We want you to be basically Jamie Moyer, a guy with very little velocity, but high in command. He can place pitches exactly where he wants. His off speed stuff has a lot of break in it. And that's exactly what the Giants want Zito to do.
Yeah, 49 years old, you got to be doing something right to still be in the league. That's unbelievable.
And I think Zito going forward, does he I mean, obviously, he's not going to throw perfect games or shutouts or really, let's be realistic, he's not going to go eight innings a whole lot this year. Going forward, does this mean that Zito could possibly be an above-average fifth starter? Do you think that Zito is the trash that Giants fans still expect?
I expect him to still be really bad this year, struggle a lot, because if you're going to say one start's going to be his season, then we're going to lose 120 games because Lincecum, Kane, and Bumgarner are going to get rocked all year.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen either. They're going to figure it out. They're going to start throwing 7-8 innings, 1-2 runs, just like Zito's going to start going 4 innings, 6 or 7 runs.
Yeah, and people have to remember, it's the first 4 games of the year. It's the first week of the year.
Exactly.
Just like in spring training, you can't take too much off of spring training stats. You can't take too much off of the first 4 games of the year. As much as I want to with Zito, like you said, Bumgarner, Kane, Lincecum, they're not going to give up 4, 5, 6 runs every single time. They're going to go back to their 1-2-0 run games.
Yeah, I mean, I want Zito to keep it up all year. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't want him to do bad. I just think he's going to do bad.
Now, let's get to what the problem was supposed to be this year for the Giants, and that's the offense. The offense was supposed to be not much improved from their NL worst offense last year. It was bad last year, so bad. And really all we did was get Melky Cabrera, Angel Pagan, and then throw Brandon Belt in there. Now, Angel Pagan, I was high on him coming into the season. I was actually saying high on Angel Pagan, low on Melky Cabrera. I think that Angel Pagan will get on base. I think he's going to steal over 30, 35 bases, and he's going to be a real value to the team.
And I was tuning the Melky horn all offseason. I love that trade. Because I love anyone that just lets it fly when they swing. And just take a hack.
The Juan Uribes of the world.
Exactly. Oh, love Juan Uribe. Anyways, I was tuning the Melky Cabrera horn all offseason. And then suddenly everybody else started tuning it after spring training. And he's just kept it going.
And you know what? He's kept it going. And again, it's a very small sample size with just the 4 games. But Pagan has not improved from his awful spring training stats. And Melky has kept it going. He's hitting for power. He even has a couple walks, which is not what Melky Cabrera usually does. And he really is picking it up. And it looks like he could be the number 2 hitter that we desperately need.
Oh, and he's my perfect prototype 2 hitter.
Yeah.
I like 2 hitters that have power. They can hit gaps. He's got speed, but he's not a base stealer.
Exactly.
He stole a good number of bases last year, but his percentage was really poor. And then he doesn't get a lot of walks, but he still has a good eye. Mm-hmm. He's up there to hit, and he understands to get hits, you have to swing at the good pitches.
Yeah.
And that's what he does. And I think him and Pablo back-to-back, that's going to be
scary.
Nice to see. The only thing I'm worried about is when Freddie gets back, if Freddie takes that two spot and you have to move Melky down, you have to move Melky or Pablo down. I don't know if I like that.
You know what? I say take Pagan out of that leadoff role. If he's still not performing, you have to put your best hitters in that first four roles. And after Pagan, maybe even put Buster in that first spot. Maybe you
no.
even put
Buster's never leaving the four hole.
You have to put someone that gets on base, though,
it
for
would,
Melky
I think,
and Panda to drive in.
If they're really going to send Pagan down when Freddie gets back, it's going to be because Freddie steps into that leadoff spot.
Freddie could be in the leadoff
spot. I mean, he's not very fast. He can't steal bases, but he can hit,
yeah,
and he'll be on base. And then Cabrera and Sandoval both have extra base power, so they could knock him in, coming in behind him. But I think you got to stick it out with Pagan a little longer.
Yeah.
The Gregor Blanco thing, I wanted him on the team, but I didn't want him to start very many games. And he really hasn't done anything yet. And I'm afraid we're not going to get out of him what people expected.
I'm still high on Gregor Blanco. I still think that he could be the next Andres Torres, kind of like a poor man's Torres. And I still think that he has potential to be an on-base machine. I mean, he had a .358 on-base percentage for his entire career. And we basically picked him up for free. He was just right there for the taking. .358 is above average.
But then you have to factor in, if you got that, why are you out there being picked up for free?
Because
you don't produce.
Maybe. I mean, Gregor Blanco hasn't produced yet, but I'm still a little bit high on him. Now, someone else that I'm high on, and this is to the extreme, and that's Pablo Sandoval. I thought about three, four months ago after the season, I was thinking, you know what? Pablo is going to get back to training, and I'm saying Pablo Sandoval is going to be in the top five of NL MVP this year. And so
that's
far,
pretty bold.
So far, he's proving me right. Already has two
yeah.
home runs, already is driving in runs. I mean,
was he got six or seven?
Yeah, RBIs are so wishy-washy and so much stat that shouldn't be trusted basing, you know, you can't base someone's performance of a year on RBIs. But he is driving in runs, which is something the Giants didn't have last year. And he's still playing his great defense at third base. I think Pablo Sandoval is going to have a top five NL year, and I think that he will continue this absolute tear that he's going through. What do you think about Pablo Sandoval this year?
Now, that's a pretty bold prediction there. Top five in the MVP, because there's a lot of MVP
yeah.
top people in the NL. I mean, two of them in our own division. Three of them even, Kemp, Kershaw, Upton. I don't think he could finish in front of any of those three. But I do expect him to play really well. I mean, if you step back, the guy's a career 300 hitter. He
mm-hmm.
had his one bad year, but that's because he was 300, 350 pounds. He just can't play at that weight. He's not skinny like he came into last year.
Yeah.
But he's at the weight that he came up into the pros with. And he came up in the pros with 2 330 seasons.
Yeah.
So this is a weight he can play at, even though it's not small. That doesn't matter. Prince Fielder isn't small. They're
yeah.
never going to ask him to lose any weight.
No.
Because he can perform.
Exactly. And, yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, he's nicknamed Kung Fu Panda for a reason. Because he's a big guy that's so agile. Lovely Barry Zito even gave him that nickname. Probably the best thing that he's ever done for the Giants.
Yeah. Well, second best after yesterday.
Exactly. Second best after that absolute miracle that happened yesterday. Just amazing. It really, that just doesn't happen. He's the second left-hander to pitch a shutout at Coors Field ever. And the other one was Tom Glavin.
Who throws as slow as Zito.
Exactly. But Tom Glavin is a Hall of Famer. And then Barry Zito comes in and does that. It's pretty amazing. Now, that's going to do it all for us at Sports City. I'd like to thank Brian for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to have Brian Sanchez on the show. And I will actually be on Brian Sanchez's show, and that's the Sports Report. That's on in about 2 minutes, 6 to 8, every Tuesday. And that's with Case Donahue as well. It's a good show. Don't want to miss it. This has been it for Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu.